Hello and welcome to my Yellow Bench. I'm Liv Cropper and this is Rooted, the Human Side of Sustainability Leadership. Now in today's episode, I'm talking to Tara Schmidt. She's Executive Director for Transition Finance Scotland, which is the Green Finance Institute's mission for Scotland. Now, she's got a fantastic and fascinating career, doing all sorts of different things, but always with this theme of sustainability running through. And we've got a really interesting conversation coming up for you here. Tara talks to me a lot about the need for pragmatism, the need for being really curious about different people's perspectives and really digging down to understand what's behind the headlines. And we talk actually about her tips for how you can consume and stay abreast of climate news and world affairs, but whilst not letting it kind of drag you down and get you down. And it's a really interesting part of our conversation, so stay tuned for that. And we've also got a bit of a funny bit that I completely misunderstood something she was saying about trees. So stay tuned for that at the end. I hope you enjoy that bit too, because we actually ended up having quite a lot of fun and a good laugh in this conversation. So thank you for listening, and let me know what you think as always. So today joining me on my yellow bench is Tara Schmidt. Now Tara is Executive Director for Transition Finance Scotland. Now this is the Green Finance Institute's mission for Scotland, and it's made up of over 40 partners across finance and policy, as well as the real economy. They're all working together to accelerate and unlock finance for Scotland's transition to a more sustainable, decarbonised economy. Now Tara has previously been Head of Climate and Sustainability Strategy for Lloyds Bank. She's got over 25 years experience across energy transition and sustainability finance. She brings skills from lots of different roles that she's had over the years, from being an engineer, an analyst, business developer, strategist, and a banker. She's got very extensive work in climate frameworks. Now, Tara is absolutely at the top of the game of keeping close to the latest developments in technology and regulation and policy development, and I'm always in awe of her knowledge on this. So I'm delighted to welcome you to Rooted, Tara Schmidt.
Thanks, Liv. It's a pleasure to be with you.
It's really lovely to have you here, and I'm really looking forward to catching up because we haven't spoken for a while, have we?
I know. It's good to see you. Very good to see you.
You too. And as I was telling you before we started the podcast, we're going to be really talking today about your roots in this work, the branches that you're most proud of. This is my little tree metaphor going on here, weathering the storms, and seeds of wisdom that you could pass on to others. And we're really interested, and I know my listeners are really interested in what it's really felt like to do this work and to have this career that you've had and how it's felt along the way. So I'm going to be digging into that as we get going and as we talk. So shall we start? Shall we start with your roots?
Let's start with your roots.
Tell me, where did your roots in this work begin? What drove you to your career in sustainability?
Yeah, it's funny because I think sometimes people think when you officially have a sustainability title in your role, that's when it started. But for me, it started way back in my childhood. I've always really, really been interested in nature and the environment. So you may guess from my accent, sometimes people don't know exactly what side of the pond or if I'm somewhere in the middle, but I grew up actually in Texas on an island just off the coast of Texas. And I really got interested in sustainability, you know, basically living on the beach and seeing oil spills and getting really worried about the environment, the impact on fishing, you know, on the marine environment, and also just having cows literally across the road from me and trying to think about nature and the implications and growing up in a small town in Texas. But so there's probably been several kind of turning points from that. So I always knew I wanted to do sustainability. But in Texas, it was really difficult. You know, way back, I started my career, oh my goodness, it's probably now almost 30 years ago. But back then, you couldn't study environmental engineering. So it was kind of little steps by little steps for me and how my career evolved. And as you mentioned, I think in the introduction, a lot of people that know me know and I've taken a number of career changes, but it's always been around where can I drive the greatest impact and sustainability. So I started my career as a chemical engineer, but with an environmental science, you know, specialty, and worked for BP to change things from the inside out, and looking at way back when Beyond Petroleum, which is probably a lot of things to learn from that. Then to Borneo, I've lived all over the world, from Asia, Middle East, Africa, and so on. But it was really Borneo for people that have kind of connected in with nature there. When we think about deforestation and the orangutans and biodiversity, that's where my sustainability career really started to launch. And I went full throttle into looking at sustainability roles and where I could drive impact. And then I guess my latest one, the branch, is I've moved from the corporate and finance space into, you know, more of a nonprofit type of role of where I can really drive impact in the next phase of my career.
It's fascinating. You've kind of really worked across the whole spectrum, almost, from the kind of the scientific engineering end and that kind of the natural world end, and now you're in that sort of economic part, absolutely deep in that, aren't you? How did your move from the sort of the scientific engineering side of it into the more, I guess, the more sort of corporate finance side? What was driving that?
Yeah, well, actually, if I go back to Borneo, I think the thing that really, you know, woke me up was, you know, we can say stop cutting down the trees, but ultimately, when I started to engage with local people, of course, they didn't want to cut down the trees. They didn't want to have impact on biodiversity. They really depended on it. But they're also really focused on jobs and, you know, well-being and livelihoods. And, you know, I guess at that point, I went back and I did my MBA to focus on international business and finance. And I guess where we started to get to know each other more in the sustainable finance space, you know, in both of our previous careers. But I think it was an eye-opener at that point to say, we can't just say stop doing things. You know, there are a number of drivers there of why people are having to do things, you know, basically to put food on the table, literally, if I talk about Borneo in particular, but I'm sure there's lots of parallels around the world, which really got me interested in economics and finance and wanting to really, you know, change my career more to that space to be able to drive further impact.
So it's like a sort of move into the pragmatic financial commercial realities and sort of trying to balance the two and make impact with that balance.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I think it's kind of digging in. If we want to drive impact, it's worth always kind of leaning in to understand, you know, and I think it's particularly, you know, so important today, you know, as you and I were talking about right before the podcast launch, was, you know, the world is really challenging at the moment. And I think it's really crucial. And something I always think back to my days in Borneo is, it's one thing to tell people to stop doing something, but what's driving them doing it? Because, you know, I would speak to local communities in Borneo that are like, of course, we don't want to cut down our trees. Of course, we don't want to destroy our biodiversity. But there's other drivers there that need to be met as well. And I think it's also a good thing for us to think about, you know, in the current state of play, is how can we be more pragmatic and supporting people on that journey to be more sustainable?
Can you tell me then, of all of these very varied experiences that you've had and different types of phases of your career, what branch of your career would you say you're the most proud of so far?
It's funny, because I think if I look throughout my career, I remember someone telling me, it looks like you've worked with walkers, sprinters, and marathon runners, you know, when we think about business and finance and everything in between that I've worked on. And, you know, I guess I could say, in some ways, working with the walkers, being able to get them to move forwards on sustainability is really helpful. But then you look at the marathon runners and they're like, wow, you know, they've been amazing. You look at some of these big multinational corporations or, you know, leading financial institutions on sustainability. But I think they're both equally credible and equally important that we need to get everybody going in the right direction. And I think probably the thing I'm most proud of is where we're breaking down barriers of us and them. So rather than pointing at some, you know, organizations that are moving more slowly, it's about leaning in and understanding a bit more about equity and being able to support them on that journey just as much as those that are the forward innovators, you know, of sustainability. So I think probably one of the things I'm most proud of, and Liv, you'll know this very well.
Okay, we
worked on this together. But I think it's really where we can support organizations across the spectrum on transition planning.
Yeah.
And being able to lean in with them on, you know, what are the practical, pragmatic approaches that we can help walkers, sprinters, and marathon runners to be able to move forward on their transition journeys. So I think that's probably been one of the areas I've been most proud of, you know, in working with the Transition Plan Task Force, or now, you know, Transition Finance Council as that evolves as well, but also the practical aspects as, you know, my role with Transition Finance Scotland and Green Finance Institute is how do we start to make, you know, practical steps in terms of the financing of the transition to make it as palatable and exciting as other asset classes that we see out in the market today.
And that work on helping companies at all different stages to plan for the transition is a super tough nut to crack, isn't it? What's your role been predominantly in that activity? What would you say is kind of been the bit that you've focused on?
Well, it's interesting because we, you know, I guess one angle, and you probably talked to some sustainability professionals, is about the reporting, but it's so much more than reporting, right? It's the strategy. How are you going to actually evolve your business model or look at transitioning, be it your lending book or your financial portfolio? But I think the pinch point that we're seeing is all around the transition technologies that we need. So I'm spending a lot of time now is how do you start looking at financial innovation and solutions for all the transition technologies or investments, you know, acquired, not just energy supply when we talk about renewables, but, you know, heat, you know, how do we, and I'm probably thinking of you sitting in your home with your heat pump, I think we used to talk about in years past. So heat and retrofitting, electrification of transport, we need to basically rewire our entire economies. And I think one of the key things is how do we look at financial innovation to be able to start getting money flowing to where it needs to be to transition our economies.
I've always found that's the bit when I've worked with you in the past and when we've been talking, it's always felt like you're able to think at this very sort of big picture, you know, what does the economy need? What does the transition need? And you know, what's the problem we're trying to solve? But then you've also been able to find, you know, well, what are the gaps? Like, what are the specific practical problems or the specific practical things that might actually help solve, you know, this bigger issue, and kind of really go down into like something that's much more tangible and real. Like, well, you need to, maybe a company needs a framework of reporting framework to tell them these are the things you need to focus on, or maybe there's something with the way that their finance deals are structured that needs to be changed or innovated. So I've always felt that you've got that big piece and then you see that, okay, here's a gap, now let's actually try and solve it.
Yeah, I guess it's helpful being a strategist and an engineer.
Yes.
I think sometimes at the moment, you know, if I look back over my 30-year career in sustainability, 30 years ago, it was like pushing water uphill, trying to get people to look at sustainability and trying to build the business case. And then I think, you know, we've gone through a phase where I think many sustainability professionals felt like they were being pulled in, you know, everything, everywhere, all at once kind of mentality. Because, you know, if we think about the Paris Agreement and then all the way up to, I guess, here in the UK, you know, with Glasgow and everything as well, there was so much momentum. And I think things are starting to, you know, some people worry, are we slowing down? I think it's that we're just kind of resetting. And I think we're moving from, I think the last few years, things have been so busy. We've talked a lot about reporting and the top level. And to your point, I think what we're seeing now is we need to get much more pragmatic and think about, you know, the bottom-up aspect as well. Both are equally important, thinking top-down and bottom-up. But I think the bottom-up really helps to bring to life for everyone, and taking people on the journey is what's the benefit of sustainability, that they can really feel it and it feels really tangible to them when we think about investments and what that means in terms of high quality jobs or affordability or the economic impact as well as the nature impact that they can feel. And I think that's, you know, sometimes, you know, I think people are worried. It is tough times at the moment. I mean, we've just seen the Trump administration pull out of, what is it, 66 different, you know, international mechanisms, including things like the UNFCCC and the IPCC. So for those, you know, that may be listening in, those are all the UN kind of key fundamental organizations on climate change. But I think it's also, you know, if we look at investments like electrification of transport, heat, we look at renewables. I mean, they're continuing to grow. So I think it's trying to focus on that bottom up and looking at the tangible opportunities that are being presented around sustainability as well, which will support that top down view of, you know, I think as we're saying in the GFI, we call it transactions to transitions, is being able to look at more and more of that practical, tangible investment and what that can also mean from a wider systems perspective.
Yeah, I love that. That makes a lot of sense. Let's move into, I guess, where the times have been more tricky, because, you know, we know that your career has had lots of different parts to it. You know, there's been lots of transition you've had yourself. But what's been the tougher times out of your career?
Well, the tougher times, I think, have been where, I mean, I've always been driven by impact, and, you know, my whole career has been sustainability in various shapes and forms. But typically when I've moved on to a new role, it's been where I can drive more impact, where things are moving too slow. And I think, you know, that's been tough, particularly even now. You know, I think it kind of goes back to the point I was making, is there's a lot of things that are going on in the nether sphere around us, geopolitical uncertainties, you know, pressure on organizations like the United Nations and, you know, UNFCCC and others. But, you know, I think that's tough. But to stay grounded, I think it's always worth kind of also reflecting back where we were, you know, where we've come from. And we've made immense progress. So I think that's what always helps me to stay grounded, is to start to think really about the impact, and reconnecting, I think, is really key to that as well. Reconnecting with why we're doing this, you know, why sustainability is so important. So, you know, where we see impacts in, you know, nature protection, natural capital, where we start to see some of these transition technologies I mentioned, you know, they really are growing. When you think about where we were 10, 20, I mean, 30 years ago, we were talking about a 4 to 6 degree scenario projection, you know, as a market analyst. And yes, we're having challenges on 1.5 to 2 degrees, but, and we need to keep fighting. It needs to go faster, but we've made good progress, which is where I always try to keep in mind, is where we've come from.
Yeah. And when you think about those tougher times around impact, you know, are there specific moments that you think of? I mean, sometimes we think about, I don't know, the proposal that was rejected, or, you know, a difficult board meeting or whatever. You know, are there specific moments that, or something happening in the news that just completely changes the landscape? Are there any specific moments like that where your sense of the impact you were making was just completely hit?
Well, I think policy is probably a good one at the moment, and we've been through this before. I remember when I took on my first official role, I guess, as I was saying, in sustainability. So I joined a sustainability, purely focused, pure play consultancy. And at that point, the Trump administration had pulled the U.S. out of the Paris Agreement the first time around. And then, of course, today, you know, as we think even this week of the Trump administration now pulling out of 66, you know, organizations as well. It's not easy, is it?
No.
But I think we have to keep, you know, rather than just kind of pushing forwards, reset and look at where we can innovate and keep progressing. So, but it's not easy.
You and I have talked before about how, so I see you as somebody who is super close. I think I said it in my introduction, super close to the latest news, the latest developments. And for me personally, I've kind of had to, and over the years I've learned to just withdraw a bit from this and just sort of trust that the big news will find its way to me. You know, I'll keep in touch, but I'm not going to be a sort of an expert on current affairs in this world. And that's what I do to kind of protect myself from those ups and downs, is I kind of just keep at quite a distance from them and just try and keep a gap. But you're so close, you know, you're following, I think I'm right in saying you pretty much follow this stuff on a daily basis, you know, close to it. You know those ups and downs intimately. How do you stay so close to it and stay okay with it?
You know, it's funny. I was even talking to my family about this recently, you know, being from Texas. So, you know, I think things are quite becoming politicized here that shouldn't be politicized. But, you know, having, as you might expect, you know, at the moment coming from that environment as well, they were asking something similar this weekend. And I think it's worth just digging in more to the analysis, you know, and rather than, there's a lot of us and them and rhetoric and pressure is saying, hang on, let's look beneath the surface as a way of almost leaning into it more. Because then that goes back to this point I was saying around, well, what's really driving that? What can we learn from, you know? So back to things like equity. So hopefully most people know the difference between equity and equality, you know? So when we think about equity, you know, why are some people pushing back on, you know, investments in transition? It's probably worries about affordability, because cost of living crisis is so challenging, you know, if we think about now as an example, or I'm going to lose my job, you know, because I'm working in something that's considered quote unquote dirty, but people want to change. And I think that's a way of diffusing the challenges that we're hearing out in the news. So, you know, maybe we don't want to listen to headline news, but, you know, I think when we look more at the, you know, policy and market, energy analysis, those sorts of things, and dig into what's behind it all, that's really a helpful way of kind of staying grounded again. And what can we do to try to lean into that, you know, rather than the just us and them or some of the politicization that we're seeing out of everything at the moment.
That's really interesting, that sense of curiosity and the kind of like an intellectual curiosity, what's really going on, but also taking quite a balanced view with that. And yeah, okay, so there's people that are upset about this. Why are they upset? Let me look into that. That seems like a really healthy way of looking at it. Perhaps my mistake is to follow the headlines and see the real kind of harsh statements and then go, no, I don't want to engage with that. And leave it there, whereas you're kind of, no, I'm going to find out what's really going on here.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think that's another way of, you know, if we really want to build the business, you know, investment case for sustainability, we have to lean in and listen to others. And, you know, for some people, it's not going to be carbon. It's going to be, actually, this is going to, I mean, another one is energy security. A lot of times, you know, is the debate energy security, that we need to do more, you know, drill baby drill, or energy security when we think, I'm sitting here in Scotland, you know, all our natural resources and wind. I mean, that is energy security, right? Mm-hmm. So, but again, leaning in, understanding why people are concerned, and then that helps to broaden out our, you know, our whole business and investment proposition for moving forwards on sustainability. So I think leaning in is a good thing, but we also, and this is probably the other point I would make, is need to, I think sustainability professionals, you know, we all want to make the world a better place. We do need to protect ourselves. So I totally understand, Liv, and I hear that from many others. I think I was telling you before the podcast, is the news is really challenging at the moment. We need to protect ourselves and make sure that we continue to recharge and be ready for another day, you know, to make the world a better place. But I think sometimes if we can do it in a careful way, lean in, try to understand, so that then we can progress forwards, is a good thing.
I quite like to just ask you, this is going off on a bit of a tangent, but it is related to what we've just been talking about. As I said, I have always got this impression of you being very well informed. How do you keep informed as well as have, you know, your day job and your, you know, your responsibilities outside? Like, is there something that you look at every morning, or there's like some key things that you just keep abreast of? Do you have time blocked out? What do you do?
Yeah, I have time blocked out in the morning, first thing on news. And so I listen to, you know, daily podcasts. So again, maybe on that protection is look at some of the more, you know, analytical kind of podcasts that are telling you more of what they think is driving, you know, what's going on in the world.
What are your favorite ones? Tell me a couple of your favorite ones.
So I really like just the FT Morning Briefing podcast.
Yeah.
That's quite helpful.
Okay, yeah.
I also like, and it probably does get a little bit more contentious, but there's a lot underneath it. But if I think about outrage and optimism as well, so that's a really good one. And then I kind of pick and choose. I look through on my Apple podcast list and I'll pick out some themes to see what different, you know, perspectives are saying, which I think goes back to that.
Yes.
We need to look from all perspectives. And I also try to look at media, not just from the UK perspective, or, you know, I guess being a dual national, looking at the US perspective, but try to look at it from what are they saying in the Middle East, you know, so what are they saying in, you know, Africa or Asia, so that you start to build out more of a picture.
It sounds like you're really making a lot of effort to go outside of your own bubble. You know, you're not going to your same old favorites. You're trying to get a diverse range of thoughts in the mix. Yeah.
And the other thing I would say, Liv, is, I mean, you know, for maybe some of your listeners, when you start to do that, it becomes really interesting. So it's not necessarily just a task, you know, saying, oh, okay, I need to look at this from lots of different perspectives. You'll be like, wow, I hadn't thought about that. Or, oh, well, actually, there might be an opportunity if we think about it this way. I mean, like the Middle East at the moment, you can look at some countries in the Middle East are really trying to push forwards on transition. And I think there's things that then we can take back to local markets. So even though my day job at the moment is really looking at Scotland, I think there's a lot that we can learn from emerging markets. And emerging markets, yes, of course, can learn from us, but we can learn from them too.
Interesting. So, yeah, that was a little tangent, wasn't it? But I mean, I'm glad we did that. what would you say would your advice be to somebody who was, you know, maybe, I don't know, maybe kind of moving into a sustainability leadership position, maybe been in the game a while, moving into a position of more leadership, more responsibility? What advice would you perhaps give to somebody in that place?
Yeah, I guess it would be a few things that I would advise. One, I don't know, have you seen Jane Goodall's interview right before she passed? I don't know if you had the opportunity. She's talking about things to watch. Well, that's what I recommend if you want one that's inspirational. I'll tell you a few things inspirational. But I think the thing she left us with, you know, and so the interview wasn't released till right after she passed. So it was last, you know, words of wisdom, but it's one that really got to me. But it was, and maybe this goes back to the walkers, you know, sprinters and marathon runners, but, you know, even little things can really add up to massive big impacts. And so I think if somebody's starting a new, you know, sustainability career, is looking, even if it's for little things, don't get worried that you're not making enough impact in one go. I think the important thing is to start to look at all the little things that might add up to the snowball effect of something really impactful. So keep progressing forwards, even if it's challenging at this point in time. There's little things that we can all do.
I'm smiling when you're talking about that, because the last couple of days I've been getting into James Clear's Atomic Habits book. I'd never come, it's a bit of a classic really, this one. I'd never really actually taken the time to read it until recently. And he talks about getting 1% better every day. And if you just get a tiny bit, 1% better every day, you know, after a year, you're sort of 37 times better than you were when you started. So it might all seem tiny, but the compound effect of it over a year can be enormous. And the converse is, you know, if you're getting 1% worse every day, the compound effect of that can be pretty dramatic as well. But yeah, it's just that idea of, you know, as long as every day you're doing something small in the right direction,
exactly,
you get where you want to go.
Yeah, and I think the other thing is, you know, I've had some people ask me, you know, how do they get into more of a mainstream career in sustainability? So even kind of taking a step back from what you mentioned is, I mean, I kept doing, you know, like when I was working as a market analyst, I was doing scenario analysis on climate, but, you know, it was part of a wider role that I was doing. And I remember the UN was asking us for some data for this market research firm I worked for. And everybody was like, we don't have time for this. I did it in the evenings because I thought, I really want to help, you know, the UN out on looking at, you know, climate in Africa. And, you know, off that, I got a signed letter from Kofi Annan, which my husband always, you know, thank you very much. But I think actually it was a huge learning experience for me of then when I did leave, and then I worked for the Task Force on Climate-Related Financial Disclosures on like their technical guidelines, which has become huge now. But at the time, everybody was like, what was TCFD? Or, you know, now it's TNFD and everything going on around that as well. But it was little steps that I saw things that I could help with that would be a real value add that then, you know, it makes a big impact for the world, but I guess also for, you know, people that are looking at their journeys in sustainability can also help you to have greater impact in your career as well. If you take on some of those little things that start to snowball up to bigger and bigger things as well. So, yeah. The other thing I just wanted to say though was, I think there's a key aspect around reconnecting. And I don't know if this is one I see you nodding, but you know, I think there's been a lot of work on top down, as we were saying, in sustainability. And what I'm hearing more and more from people, you know, in sustainability professions is they want to reconnect with the tangible stuff as well. And so, you know, that reconnecting, as we said earlier about, you know, tangible investments, the impacts of that. But I think it's also reconnecting like with local communities. And I don't know if you heard this, you know, where we used to work, but we always talked about, do we want to become the Bank of Dave? I don't know if you've seen the film, you know, the local bank.
Yes.
But I think there's something in it, you know, that I'm hearing for people, particularly in sustainable finance, is being able to really see, you know, and engage with their local communities. And I think that's also an opportunity to be able to really show more of that impact. And that, again, can be that kind of spiral effect of driving real change, but also recharging as a sustainability professional.
You've often talked about the being clear about the real economy impact of sustainability work and really kind of tying things back to, okay, this is all, you know, all very well to dream this up in an ivory tower, but what's the actual impact on the ground that this is gonna make? And I think one of the things you get by reconnecting and leaning into your local community is a closer understanding of like the small business world and like what it means to have a small business and what it means to run a small company and just those wide variety of things that might be on your mind as a small business owner or as somebody who works in a community group, and just and then being able to see the difference and the gap and the vastness sometimes of that gap between what somebody working in a corporate role, maybe working with a supply chain or working with clients, you know, might expect of these smaller companies and what's actually feasible and pragmatic on the ground. So that, I guess that's another reason for just, yeah, trying to get in amongst it.
Exactly. And I think like going back to the bottom up, top down, I mean, you and I would have spoken about this many years ago, you know, everybody talks about scope 3 emissions, right? Which is typically, it depends on the sector, but, you know, tends to be most of the emissions that, you know, we're worried about. But a lot of that is small businesses. It's about logistics. It's about things that, you know, really impact local communities and, you know, people that, you know, if you look at the, you know, SME margins, you know, small, medium-sized enterprise margins, they're pretty tight, right? So if we want things to work and we want to lean in with the real economy, we really have to lean in with local communities to support them on the journey. That's so absolutely crucial. But I think it's so beneficial for us as sustainability professionals to do that to as well, and reconnecting and understand why we're doing all of this in the first place and how we can really take people on the journey to move things forwards.
Yeah. What's worked for you, or what have you seen other people do in terms of that kind of community work? What seems to help?
I think, I'm working for Transition Finance Scotland. So everything that we do is all very, very much local, you know, based here in Scotland across communities and sectors and so on. But I guess more broadly, you know, I think everyone, if you're sitting in London or you're sitting in, you know, in a small community around the UK or worldwide, I think it's about, you know, not looking just at the numbers, but what really is behind the numbers and having some real open discussions rather than, I think it's difficult at the moment that we all are panicking, you know, climate change, we need to move faster, but it's worth just kind of taking a step back, slow down, and have some chats with, you know, people that are at the front end of it, like SMEs and supply chain, to really understand the challenges they're having to face into and how we can help them.
I'm wondering also, just in terms of your advice or thoughts for others, you've had this very varied career, you know, you've done consultancy, you've worked for lots of different sectors, you've worked in a big corporate, you've worked for a non-profit, you know, you've had time in a permanent role, out of a permanent role, portfolio career. What's your kind of philosophy or thoughts about career that you could share with us? Because some people, I'll put my hand up and say, I used to be like this, you know, will go to a big company and stay there forever or as long as they can. and they'll be perhaps be quite afraid to come out of that world, whether it's to move to another company or to do a pivot to a different type of work. But you don't seem afraid of changing your job. So tell me a bit more about how you see it.
Yeah, I think, I mean, I'm trying to think how many companies I've probably worked for and also as a consultant. I think one thing I've learned is that companies all have their own organizational, well, culture, but also personality. And I think for individuals that have stayed in one place their whole career, there's benefits to that. My husband's done that as well. So I wouldn't want to cut that down. And I mean, you can have a lot of influence staying in your career with one company. But I think, you know, if you have a certain proposition that you see of how you can drive impact, sometimes working in different organizations can really bring that forward. So, you know, as I was saying, I've worked with walkers, sprinters, and marathon runners. And if you're working for a walker, yes, it's good to get them moving, but you may not be tapping into your full potential and staying in that type of organization. So maybe you are, because if it's a big behemoth and you're getting them to change things, even a small bit, that's a huge impact. So I won't disregard that. But it's worth thinking about, what's your USP? Where is you can have impact? And then ultimately, I'm a consultant, you know, at heart. So I've moved organizations because I can see where I can help from a strategy perspective, you know, or driving impact within a specific space. And then I think someone had used the example of Nanny McPhee, you know, and then you move on to the next one to get things moving along. Some of us, that's our USP, and others, you know, it may be that, you know, it's one career for life. But I think that's something you have to look really internally on and see, are you driving as much impact as you could with all your great skill sets and how you can best use them?
Yeah, no, that's lovely. And it's a theme I talk to my clients about quite a lot, actually, that that idea about understanding what your strengths are, your unique strengths, and really, truly, like, believing in them so that, you know, you can kind of share them with others and lean into that and achieve your potential. But I think also, and you've touched on this as well, it's that idea of, like, what's your philosophy around sustainability, business, change, how you get stuff done. Some people have, you know, what's their philosophy on sustainable finance, or what's their philosophy on managing a sustainable supply chain, you know, like, and you can have your own philosophy, that you then go into a business and okay, now this is my way of, this is my thought process. Let's try this here with a different type of organization or at a different stage. But I think there's something about that, you know, recognizing we can all have our own set of ideas about how to do this. And for you, it's come through really strongly, this pragmatic sense and this sense of listening to all perspectives and thinking about equity. And so that's the mindset and the philosophy that you will work with whenever you go into an engagement or a job, wherever that might be. So I think that's something that as you get further down your career, it's like talking to somebody and working out, what is my philosophy about this work? What is my philosophy about delivering sustainability?
Yeah, I think the other thing I'd add to that, I fully agree. I'm kind of on my, I guess, kind of a journey as well, where I've been challenged recently by some friends as trying to look at things through a child's eyes again. So it's, you know, thinking about your strengths, but also, you know, if we think about the world at the moment, it is challenging. So how do we continue to recharge? My daughter, you know, we've chatted about climate change and nature and everything, but it's trying to look through her eyes, but also thinking back, why did I start this career to begin with? And what really makes me happy? So tree bathing is one that always makes me happy. But
tell me about that. Where do you do it?
Well, I'm fortunate. I have woodland directly across from my house, living in Scotland. So, so we go tree bathing quite a bit. But you know,
can I ask you? Do you lie down on the ground in the middle of the tree? Do you take your clothes off? I don't know why. I'm like, as soon as you said it, I'm like, what is going on?
Tree bathing?
Well, I've heard of it, but I've never really like.
So all it is walking through woodland and preferably with your clothes on.
Okay. You're not going to like find me in your woods naked or anything.
I'm not inviting you to go like tree bathing at my house.
I don't know why. I just imagine, well, bathing. I don't know. I imagine you'd have your clothes off. That's why I'm saying, where do you go?
No. So tree bathing is all about just walking. And, you know, if you walk in woodland for half an hour every day, I just feel more rejuvenated. Or you know, we're looking right now of going up to visit the Rewilding Center, you know, here in Scotland as well, so you can start to see how nature is starting to take back over and how you can do that. But I think having some of those tangible perspectives that also helps with innovation and creativity, because you remember, hey, why did I start this career to begin with? And I think a lot of us, as we go through the journeys of our career, one is to remember our USP and our strengths as we build up over time. But I think the other thing I'm just kind of, you know, been reminding myself of over the last couple of weeks is, if you want to be innovative, creative, which I think we need a lot of in the current state of play of the world at the moment, it's good to also just really reconnect in a fun way, remembering why we love sustainability so much, right?
Yes. And actually, you know, you've talked about trees, which is the sort of obvious, sustainability, nature, trees, tree bathing, you know, that all kind of works. But a lot of people, they come to sustainability not necessarily out of a love of nature.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's out of a love of like society and people and, you know, a care, you know, and of course we all, you know, like we all care about all of the things, but some of us, you know, come to it because of the nature, or that some of it, some people come to it because of the marine environment first and foremost, or you know what I mean. So for you it might be tree bathing, for somebody else it might be snorkeling or diving, you know, for somebody else it might be being in a food bank and helping out with, you know, local community. And do you know what I mean? Like we've all kind of got different things.
Exactly. All of the above. I mean, that's the thing I'm loving at the moment. I'm doing more and more work on greening the built environment and heat. Because the other thing, I mean, I started my own charity in university trying to help, you know, the elderly, if we think about warm homes and some of the challenges. But I think having that, I can feel myself kind of recharging from that. So exactly as you say, Liv, find, you know, why did you start sustainability to begin with? And having that kind of real connection back in, I think will help to inspire us and keep us moving forwards.
Yeah. And I think that's one to as a bit of a takeaway, isn't it? Reconnecting with your why, but also, yeah, like deeply understanding what's your philosophy around this? What can you specifically bring to this work?
Exactly. Yeah.
I feel like that's a nice place to end the conversation on. I just love to speak to you. It's been great. Thank you. I've loved our conversation. And yeah, thanks so much.
Yeah, thanks, Liv, for the opportunity. And it's great speaking with you. I feel inspired as well.
Oh, great. Thanks, Tara. Well, I hope you enjoyed today's episode. I really loved talking to Tara, and I hope perhaps you're inspired to go and try to do something that helps you to reconnect with whatever it was that brought you to sustainability in the first place. So that might be forest bathing, clothed or unclothed. It might be diving or snorkeling or reconnecting with nature or your local community. But I hope you're inspired to try and do something around that, and to perhaps also talk and think about the specific mission or purpose or philosophy that you have to offer in your work as a sustainability leader. I also am going to just pop the link to Jane Goodall's short video in the show notes. I've just watched it, and I don't know why I didn't watch it when it first came out. It's really beautiful, and I would definitely urge you to go and take a look. And she really just reminds us that it is about all the small actions performed by all of us in the right direction that all add up to a real significant difference and a real change. So go and take a look at that. Also in the show notes, I will put the link to my email community, which I would love for you to join if you haven't already. Please follow or subscribe to this podcast so that you can be notified when a new episode drops. I really hope you do that. And lastly, if you've got to the end of all of this and you think you would like to work with me on one-to-one coaching, then please go and check out my website. It's yellowbenchcoaching.com. You'll find more information there. And you can grab some time with me through my calendar that's on my website, or you can just drop me a message on LinkedIn and let's chat. So thank you so much for listening, and I will see you next time. Bye-bye.